It's a travesty. Hope we can sway them. Thanks for listening today here in the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. Billy Shears, music director. Be sure and catch Billy Shears Saturday night here in the Head On Radio Network. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you later, gang.
A revolt among U.S. diplomats who This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones dropped more than 370 points in trading today. We'll have the latest numbers from Wall Street just before today's close, coming up in our business segment. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is trying to stop a revolt among U.S. diplomats who do not want to be forced to work in Iraq. At a town hall meeting yesterday, some diplomats opposed being directed to go to Iraq under the threat of dismissal because there may not be enough volunteers. One of the Foreign Service officers called a forced tour in Iraq a, quote, potential death sentence. Three U.S. soldiers were killed Wednesday by explosions in northern Iraq. In October, 40 U.S. troops were killed in the Iraq War. That is the lowest monthly death toll for U.S. forces in about 2 years. Across Baghdad and its northern suburbs today, at least 16 people were killed by bomb blasts. President Bush is trying to save the nomination of his attorney general choice, Michael Mukasey. President Bush said that Mukasey is being treated unfairly by some senators. There has been concern over his position on the controversial waterboarding technique. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on his nomination Tuesday. Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy has said he will oppose Mukasey's nomination because he has not definitively answered the question of the legality of the terror interrogation technique. During a speech today in Washington, President Bush accused the Democrats of, quote, behaving as if America is not at war, end quote. He said this is not the time for Congress to weaken the Justice Department. Reuters reports that the Gulf Arab states are willing to set up a way for Iran to obtain enriched uranium as a way to solve the standoff between Tehran and the West. Iran has denied that it is trying to develop an atomic weapon through the development of its nuclear program. Pakistani opposition leader Benazir Bhutto has left the country to visit Dubai 2 weeks after she survived an assassination attempt right after her return from an 8-year exile. A suicide attack in Pakistan today killed 8 and wounded 40 people aboard a bus. Paul Tibbetts, the World War II pilot of the plane that bombed Hiroshima, has died at age 92 at his Columbus home. He has requested no headstone and no funeral because he didn't want any protesters. Five-time Grand Slam champion tennis player Martina Hingis announced she's retiring from the game after she was accused of testing positive for cocaine.
PM Forney is on a mission to make life better. His pathway is civility. A professor at Johns Hopkins University, his pioneering study in civility produced a book called Choosing Civility, The 25 Rules of Considerate Conduct. In his book, Forney explains what is civility and what it means to be civil in today's world. He explores the recent decline of civility and offers ways that the direction might be reversed. His brilliant and engaging discourse outlines civility's basic rules, underscoring the values that practicing civility brings to our own lives, as well as to the lives of others. Forney's book is sprinkled with stimulating quotes, such as this by Dwight Curry, who said, "We have a choice about how we behave, and that means we have the choice to opt for civility and grace." For more information, click the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
NASA is working hard to plan a spacewalk to repair the torn solar wing of the International Space Station. The Space Shuttle astronauts will begin the fix on Saturday. The Southern California region is expected to get warm, dry Santa Ana winds over the weekend, and that is increasing the danger of brush fire conditions again, a week after the devastating blazes burned through the region. Chrysler announced plans today to cut up to 15% of its workforce. That amounts to 12,000 jobs. Chrysler will also remove four vehicle models from its auto lineup as part of the cost-cutting effort. According to the real estate website RealtyTrack, foreclosures were up 30% in the quarter ending in September compared to the previous quarter. And compared to the same period last year, the foreclosure rate was double. The Commerce Department reports that consumer spending slowed in September. It rose by 0.3%, which is the weakest performance in 3 months. Gold is trading at $793.70 an ounce. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $93.49 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Near the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 370 points at 13,559, the NASDAQ down 64, and the S&P 500 down 41. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I've always prided myself on being a big supporter of free speech. If people said hateful things or wrong things, we needed more speech to counteract those hateful things. I was a strong supporter of Columbia University inviting Iranian dictator Ahmadinejad to come there, and I was a strong supporter of the president of Colombia, Lee Bollinger, laying in to Ahmadinejad, telling him all the things that his country had done wrong, torturing gays and mistreating women and so forth. So when it came to the issue of Fred Phelps and his church picketing a military funeral, going to the military funeral to happen to be a straight person who had died, and saying that the war in Iraq was caused because God hates gay people, and saying wonderful things like, thank God for dead soldiers. You would think I would jump to say, well, I disagree with your right to say it, but I'll defend your right to say it. You'd be wrong. I do not believe that Phelps Group has a right picketing a funeral. No, I don't. And there's a reason for that. Free speech, you can always have time and place and manner restrictions. Maryland had passed a law to prevent people like Phelps, saying you have to stay 300 feet away from a funeral. And there's a reason for that. I don't care how many times Fred Phelps ACLU lawyers, sorry ACLU, I usually support you. I don't care how many times the lawyer said that a funeral is a public event. No, it's not. A funeral is not a public event. It is held on private property. Cemeteries are not public places. Yes, we bury our dead outside and not in our own homes. And for that, victims, families are supposed to undergo the hate of Fred Phelps. We've always had time, place, and manner restrictions. I couldn't believe when I heard, I forget who does the Progressive Minute on Head On Radio Network yesterday, when we did our program on global warming, and I heard the guy, he does Progressive Minute, you know, well, Fred Phelps is a beast, but I defend his right to say it. No, he has a right, yes, to say that God hates dead soldiers and God hates fags and all the awful stuff he says. But he does not have the right to do it at a funeral. I'm sorry. A funeral is a private affair. You know, to me, the whole incident with Fred Phelps reminds me of some other hate speech that's going on. Ever since the incident at Jenna, we have a lot of copycat white trash that are going around and putting nooses everywhere from a Home Depot store in Illinois to the campus, the University of Maryland, and at least two cases, get this, of nooses with black dolls on them in Pittsburgh. Nice. A noose was found hanging on the door of a black professor at Teachers College at Columbia University. Is that free speech? You know, I think people misunderstand free speech. For example, let me give you an example of someone's speech who I detest, but I would allow to occur. When Don Rumsfeld gives a speech, and the members of Code Pink try to interrupt him, try to shout him down, try to prevent him from speaking, sorry, leftists, I agree with Don Rumsfeld and disagree with Code Pink. They can ask tough questions. The guy asking John Kerry tough questions had a right to free speech. Don't tase him, bro. He had a right to ask his questions. He's standing at a mic. That's what you do after a speech. Absolutely. But you don't have a right to shout down a speaker. You don't have a right to prevent someone from speaking, even if that speech is awful. There is a time and a place. If Fred Phelps wants to take his awful message, as much as he'll need protection to do so, to the Washington Mall, he can do that. You know what? Even on a day, if there's no funerals on that day, I don't mind if he protests outside Arlington Military Cemetery. I take it back. I mind. But I think he has a right to do so. But in a moment of extraordinary grief, when a family is burying their 20-year-old child, I think the jury was right in finding that the Westboro church members intended to cause emotional distress. That's what they're about. That's what they do. They love to cause emotional distress. And I'm proud to say that the damages, the compensatory damages alone at $2.9 million, were triple the net worth of Westboro and the three members on trial. Good. Take every bit of money they have. Fred Phelps vowed to appeal, according to the newspapers, to the Fourth Circuit. It's going to be reversed in 5 minutes, he said. This case, he added, will elevate me to something important, as it draws more publicity to the cause. Look, I know it's easy to attack Phelps. That's one of the reasons why I attacked Code Pink out there. It's not about the content of what he has to say. You can ban all protests at a funeral. I'm sorry, I don't think environmentalists, who I strongly support, if you're against global warming, I don't think you should be able to go to a funeral and protest in favor of policies stopping global warming, even though I support those policies. You shouldn't be allowed to go to a funeral and protest for health care for children. Nothing I support more than health care for children. But a funeral, I'm sorry, is not a public affair. And I don't know why Matthew Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, doesn't get that. Or the university professors in the ACLU that's defending his right to speak. There are closer cases. There is the case, the famous case, of the Nazis who wanted to march in Skokie. Skokie, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago, has a very high percentage of Holocaust survivors. That's a tougher case for me because, well, streets are public places in a way that cemeteries are not. But as we focus on hate speech in America, and it's growing, and the nooses are growing, we have to be careful about what is allowed and what is not allowed. In Europe, they ban all kinds of speech. Many people know that in Europe it's a crime to deny the Holocaust. Well, I don't know that that's the right thing to do. I understand where they're coming from. I respect where they're coming from. Certainly in post-Nazi Germany, it made a lot of sense. But no, I think I'd rather do what Deborah Lipstadt did in Merry Old England. When they denied the Holocaust, she sued for libel to the victims and won and put them out of business. And now Albert Schneider has sued Fred Phelps and his organization for intentionally inflicting emotional distress on his son. Now, you know, I don't know. Maybe this isn't the liberal way to go. Maybe we are supposed to support this free speech. I had a little conversation with Bob right before going on the air where I thought he might defend their right to say it. I'm going to take a break, but I want to see if you agree with me or if you disagree with me. I'd really like you to call in. Let's discuss when free speech becomes hate speech, and when any of this should be illegal. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Tune in to Night Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hey. Thanks for lending an ear.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fixed stuff, did some art projects with the kids.
Cleaned up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up this house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're discussing free speech and hate speech. Both the Phelps Church, many of you know, that is such an awful, awful church, but I'm not condemning them for their content. No, I'm not. I'm condemning them for picketing a funeral. I consider that a private event, not a public event, and therefore an exception to free speech. I strongly support the verdict, and I hope it's upheld. And I want to talk about the difference between free speech and hate speech and where you draw that very fine line in our culture. Eric from Vermont, thank you for calling in and joining in this discussion.
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. What are your thoughts?
Boy, as soon as I blipped into the real back and forth, it's really hard to hear for you. So I'm going to try the best I can. The question you bring up is really a fascinating question. I mean, I can remember within the last 24 hours of reading that event and being just like absolutely repulsed that this family, the mother and the daughter, and this crazy Phelps guy are out there doing that with the signs that are in pictorial and so on and so forth. What's decent and non-decent in a community? not necessarily legally defined, but what is decent and non-decent? Is there something that we need to do to pass a law for this? And then how do you define it? I agree with you. I think it's repulsive and repugnant that that is not respected as a private issue for the family. There are no questions about that. But how do you, so you're an attorney, I'm not. How do you define where the difference is going to be as to legal definitions of past case, you know, so on and so forth? How do you get into that, Mark?
Well, I think it's a great question, and I have an answer as a lawyer.
I
have
you
thought
would.
Through this. and I'm very glad that you asked that question. First of all, you should know that, and I think you do know, this is not an isolated incident. According to the members of the wonderful Westboro Church, they have done this 30,000 times. I remember they started this kind of stuff when Matthew Shepard was literally crucified, and they picketed his funeral. Sweet. Your 21-year-old son is crucified, and you have to see them. Look, I am not. One of the things I firmly believe in is that you should be very careful before you dictate the content of speech. I think that you can, and I think this very well holds with what the Supreme Court has said. You can dictate time and place and manner restrictions. What you can't do is dictate content restrictions. Okay. So, no one can say that Fred Phelps cannot spread his hateful message. He can put it on a website. He can do it on the National Mall. He can do it in a public shopping mall if he wants, as long as other people are doing that in a public shopping mall. But it seems to me that a funeral is a private affair. Yes, they are outdoors. As I said, we very rarely, except in a few catacombs, bury our dead indoors. But that does not make it a public event. It is an extremely private event. I would suggest to you that a funeral is more private than a wedding. It's more private than, just about anything. It's at a time when people are at their most vulnerable, and they need the most support from their friends and family. And so you asked about laws, Eric. There are laws on the books, largely because of Fred Phelps and his organization. And Maryland had a law, and the law said stay 300 feet away from a burial. Now there's the law actually said, I have it right here, it said you have to stay 300 feet away from, let me get it, it's where is it here, funerals, burials, and I think it, I can't find it, but I think it said funeral processions. And I could see an argument maybe that funeral processions is unconstitutional because those go in the public streets, so maybe that little part of it could be struck down. But cemeteries are private. They are on private property. They tend to belong to religious institutions. But people buy private plots. You own the property you're going to die in. You actually purchase it. It is your land. And you have a right to keep people away from it. You know, the Supreme Court has upheld all kinds of restrictions around our schools, many of which are far more problematic than anything Phelps has done. You can't have pornography within so many feet of a school, for example, or you can't have someone selling tobacco within so many feet of a school. And so the Supreme Court has already made time, place, and manner restrictions. Now, it would be illegal to ban pornography in an entire city. It would be illegal to ban Fred Phelps in an entire city. But I think as long as you separate content from time and place, as I said, I have no problem saying that people who would protest a funeral of, let's say George Bush died tomorrow, and there was and at the funeral, people protested his decision to veto children's health care. I would say you could keep them from doing that. Look, Jerry Falwell died recently. I was no fan of Jerry Falwell. If there had wanted to be a demonstration in a public place talking about how horrible Jerry Falwell was, that's fine. But it would have been perfectly fair to me if anyone tried to go to his funeral and say awful things about him at his funeral, I would support arresting that person under the Maryland law. I just think that's how you avoid the free speech problem. You simply avoid the question of content, and you go right to the question of place. And I think this will be upheld and is a terrific victory. What do you think? Can I persuade you?
I agree. I think it's right that he sued and the courts gave him the settlement. And I... agree that it should never have been necessary for him to go, the family, to have gone through that trauma of having this crazy person really belittle that, plus, you know, the other signs that were there and so on and so forth. Can I play devil's advocate with you?
Go right ahead.
Actually, we're very close together in a lot of things. It's just a matter that we have so many laws, and basically if you strip down what the ACLU was talking about, it makes it a little fuzzy on some of these issues. I mean, can you say that you can play I'm forgetting my legal terminology too. A court against this person not to be within 300 feet of any funeral because of past actions. Is that something that can be done by a state or a city or some sort of political or district,
sure,
whatever situation?
I mean,
is
Eric,
that something
the
you can do?
The states have passed the law. The only question is whether they're constitutional. The state has already passed the law. This is a Maryland law. The state has passed the law. The only question is whether that law is constitutional, whether it violates the First Amendment. If it's unconstitutional, the court has to strike down the law. But the states have already passed the law. Now, I don't know that, you know, it might be a lot tougher to go after Phelps had there not been this law that was there, but it's a good law, and it's one I support. Interestingly, I think there's a much more difficult case with the nooses, which are, again, horrific stuff. I mean, you're totally threatening black people with those nooses. And I think that that's actually a tougher case than the Phelps case. But I think we can prohibit some of those, too. Again, depending on where they're located. For example, one noose was on the door of a black professor at Teachers College. That, to me, is clearly illegal. And the reason it's illegal is, to me, it's a threat. It's no different from putting, you know, a mafia horse's head in your bed or on your doorstep or burning a cross on your lawn. Now, you could burn a cross on your own lawn. As much as I hate it, you can burn a cross on your own lawn. But you can't burn a cross on your black neighbor's lawn because that's
or
a threat.
Or even having a gun permit and pulling on your neighbor even though you don't pull a trigger.
Right. I mean, look, if you go
and
you're if you are near the White House, and you're talking with a Secret Service agent there, and you say, you know what, I'm going to go kill the president, okay? He has a right to take that threat seriously, and if he believes you, to actually put you in jail. If you threaten the life of the president, even if you didn't mean it, if you do, that's a crime. If a threat is a crime, people don't understand. It's one of the things they teach you in law school. When you hear someone assaulted someone, in the ordinary discussion, the ordinary parlance, people think, oh, assault means hit. It doesn't. It's one of those little trick questions on the bar exam. Battery is when you hit someone. When you say assault and battery, what you did is you threatened to hit someone and then you hit them. The assault is the threat. Yeah, and you followed through. But the assault is the threat. If you were to send a letter saying, do this or I'll kill you, that's a threat. To me, when you put a noose specifically on the door of a black professor, you are threatening that black professor. And that you don't have a right to threaten someone. You have a right to generally say awful things like, you know, the Ku Klux Klan can march and say blacks are inferior or, I mean, it's awful and repugnant. I mean, but they can say that. I mean, Fred Phelps can march and say God hates fags. It's repugnant, but he can say that. But I think if he were to scrawl God hates you fag on the doorway of a gay person's home, all right, that to me is not free speech. That's a hate crime. And it's one of the reasons why we need, I think, hate crimes laws.
Okay.
So I don't know. Have I convinced you, Corey?
Using legal definitions of assault and battery, assault, a lot of people misunderstand as being an actual, the guy hit the guy, you know, and
Well, that's
as
how
opposed to battery where he really did hit the guy. The assault being the threat and the battery being the actual commission of the crime.
Right.
Or the threat. Now, we need to go. I'm playing devil's advocate, Mark. I'm not being difficult. But, I mean, it's good
to have
this discussion because we pass so many laws in this country, and a lot of times they become so arbitrary in terms of, like, who happens to be the judge or, you know, what force is behind this, and are we going to deal with this prosecuting attorney or whatever. And a lot of the legal process is really obfuscated because of the gray area between how it is going to be interpreted, number one. Number two, where is something that says that in the Constitution, as a strict constructionist, not that I'm
okay.
I'm playing devil's advocate, but as a strict constructionist, where is there something in the Constitution that says that no matter how ugly and repulsive and repugnant the act that the Phelps family did against that soldier and the family of that soldier during that funeral on private cemetery grounds, where is there in there that says that that's unconstitutional? What would be, if you had to present the case in front of the Supreme Court, regardless of what the political arrangement is right now, let's make a hypothetical and say, if you were going to present the case, how would you argue that that would be something that would be unconstitutional in terms of First Amendment rights?
Oh, well, I don't want, you can play devil's advocate, but I don't want to. I mean,
No. I'm not putting you on the spot. I'm just...
No.
I'm just trying
on Halloween,
to get the conversation
I play devil's advocate.
Because I think that what you're saying is very important.
Now, that's what the Monday show was about. I mean, I was playing devil's advocate. And, yeah, I mean, you can argue that a funeral is public. In fact, that's what his lawyer did argue. And you can argue that they have the right to say it. But to me, that's why I made a firm distinction, and I think it's the appropriate legal distinction, between content and time and place. All right? What I'm saying is you can't protest at a funeral. I didn't say what you said. You can't protest positively at a funeral. You know, look, you have a guy that died in the Iraq War. Many people who oppose the Iraq War, like me, all right, might want to do a protest. I've been to protests in Washington, D.C. opposing the Iraq War. But if those protesters went to the graveside, went to the funeral of a person who died in the war, unwanted, you know, I mean, if the family invites them in, I guess that's okay with me. But if they go to the funeral and they protest against the Iraq War, they should be punished. And I think that's perfectly fine. I think that's perfectly fair, along with free speech. Now, you know, there are places where free speech is absolutely allowed. Universities. You have a public space in a university. I can't think of a better place for free speech. And so that's why, like, for example, we have the nooses, and they're at the University of Maryland. That's a tougher thing for me. That's a lot tougher. If it's on an individual's doorway, it's a threat. But it's interesting. Can you really threaten an entire race? Well, the Ku Klux Klan tries. They certainly want to threaten an entire race. I don't know that we can ban nooses at the University of Maryland that are in, let's say, you know, the public square on the public sidewalk, particularly if someone's standing, you know, behind them. That's a lot tougher question for me. To me, the funeral is actually a much easier question.
But how would... If you were presenting that case in front of the Maryland Supreme Court, how would you, let's say it happened?
How would I defend Phelps, or how would I be against?
How would you say that this is in violation of something that the ACLU would present as your opposition to say, no, that's not constitutional? I mean, sometimes the Constitution can get in our way, and sometimes it works for us. Unfortunately, we're in a very, very gray area in the whole country for everything. But on that specific issue, would you argue that question if you had the ACLU on the other side?
The ACLU would be saying this is public, and I would say no. I would say a funeral is not a public event, that a cemetery plot is private, just like your home is private. You literally buy the land. You literally own that plot. The family owns the plot, or the victim, the deceased, owns that plot. And as the owner of... I can restrict anyone from coming in my house. Anybody. I don't care what your views are. I can even say, if I want, you can come in my home if you're a Democrat, but if you're a Republican, you can't come in my home. I can do that. It's my home. I can do whatever I want. I can allow, conversely, a white supremacist in a home can allow his Nazi friends in and refuse, you know, decent folk. They can do that. It's my home. In my view, a cemetery is like my home. It is
so
a private
property. So the family makes a contract with the cemetery owners or
Right.
Church officials and so on and so forth.
Right.
And this plot is given for this brand that unfortunately, because of the stubbornness we have here, has an area in there that is actually kind of like co-owned or whatever the legal definition is. And these people come on there and they are invading and being intrusive and being
right.
in a community or ethics sense, which, you know, up for definition, and that's not really important. But the argument in terms of a legal position would be that they are being intrusive of the equivalent of invading into your house or your
right.
apartment or your
that's
dwelling
exactly
place.
That's exactly what I think.
Is that what you're trying to say,
yes.
sir?
Yes. Yes, it's exactly yeah. what I'm trying to say, that it's your private property. Now, again, I am not disputing Fred Phelps' right to march in the public square to get, you know, he may have to get a permit. Lots of times you have to get a permit to do a demonstration, but the permit cannot be denied him on the basis of, you know, I'll give you a really tough one, a really tough one. You know those roadside things where you're driving on interstate highway, and it says, you know, these 2 miles sponsored by the Friars Club of whatever, of Monteagle or wherever you're passing. And the reason the state did that is, you know, they didn't want to pay all the money to clean up the litter. And basically the organizations thought they would get good publicity if they put – and so they send people out to clean the litter, or they pay someone to do it, and they get a nice little advertisement on the side of the road. And there was an interesting case that came up because the Ku Klux Klan – of wherever it was, Alabama or Mississippi, wherever it was, they paid for 2 miles to clean up the road. And obviously nobody wanted them to do that, but they argued, hey, if you open it to other organizations, we have a free speech right to do that too. In that example, and it's a tough one for me, I think I have to lean toward the Klan. In that example, where everyone is buying that clean up by the side of the road, I think you have to allow them all in or allow none of them in. Another example, after school, there was a gay group. They had a gay straight alliance in Utah schools, and they wanted to come in the public schools afterwards. And the Mormon church and the people of Utah did not want the gay people there, but they said, hey, you have other organizations, you have church groups, you have prayer groups, and they meet after school, and if they can do that, then the gay groups have to be able to meet too. And the court upheld the right of the gay groups to meet, and so the Utah school then decided to allow no groups to meet after school. Better that there be no free speech than everyone having free speech. And they have a right to do that, too. They have a right to say no one can do it. Similarly, in San Francisco, if they wanted to keep out a church group but allow, you know, gay people to be there, they couldn't. You can't make content restrictions. And I actually think it's a fairly bright line here. I think there's an easy, not so hard way to distinguish between these two examples.
Well, Mark,
anything else, Eric?
I think the issue of the private ownership of the grave site is very important in terms of legal argument in comparing that to the invasion of the privacy of your own home and in terms of, you know, constitutional efforts, though you're the attorney and I'm not, and I'm not pretending to have my nose up in the air to you at all. But anyway,
I appreciate you calling in and discussing this with me.
I was trying to help you get out that
yeah,
that
and
was
I'll tell
really
you something.
Because I do feel what they did was, I viewed it probably, I don't know, 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning sometime, and it was like, I can't believe these people are so ugly. You know, why would they want to be so ugly? And that's just like a community kind of thing. Not a legal definition of what First Amendment rights were in terms of the Constitution, in terms of the ACLU protecting First Amendment rights, supposedly, in that case, and so on and so forth. I also believe that it was just unethical, moral basis.
Eric,
just
absolutely, let me ask you a quick
repulsive
question, though.
But I mean, I think
let
the
me ask
argument
you a quick question,
you're
Eric.
Making in terms of the invasion of the area in terms of a very strict constructionist area is very important that you've made.
Eric, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this,
sir.
Though, because it's easy to condemn Fred Phelps. It's very easy. I mean, even right-wingers condemn him. He is a nasty, awful person.
Oh, I'm not damning him. That's
no, I'll damn him. I have no problem damning him. Let me ask you about someone that comes closer to home, all right? Someone who you support. Let's say Don Rumsfeld or Vice President Cheney is giving a speech lauding the progress made in Iraq. And a group of protesters called Code Pink, or called, I don't want to mean to single them out, it could be any group of anti-war protesters, stand up in the middle of a speech with their signs and start shouting out, bring the troops home, bring the troops home, bring the troops home. Okay? And the police come and they arrest them and they take them out. Do you think they should be arrested? Because I do. Even though they're on my side.
Well, you've been to protest. I was in 2005 on September 24th in D.C. Were you there on that one?
I was driving around it.
you were driving around the Beltway.
Yeah.
Why? On what grounds do you feel? Because it's public territory? Or, I mean,
no, because
what
when,
is it
when someone
they should be arrested
giving a
for?
Public speech, when someone's
Pardon?
Giving a public speech, when someone's giving a public speech, they have a right to be heard. If you drown, there's a difference between disagreeing with someone and drowning someone out. And when someone is giving a public speech as the invited guest, even if they're horrible and I disagree with them, like Cheney, there's a time and a place. They should be allowed to ask questions afterwards. They don't always allow that. But you can't drown out a public speech. Now, on the other hand, if they simply wanted to bring signs to the speech and not say anything, I don't think you could prohibit that. Again, this is Mark Levine on the law rather than the Supreme Court. I think if someone wants to go to a Cheney speech with a Stop the War Now sign, I don't think you can stop them, because that's different. You're not drowning out his speech. You're simply responding to his speech with yours. And I would say it's illegal to prevent someone, as this administration has done, from going to a speech and because they have a sign that opposes the president. I don't think you can keep out opposition signs unless you're raising them over people's head and blocking people's view and so forth. I'll tell you a story, Eric, and then I'll let you go. In 1996, I lived in California, and I was in Los Angeles, and the Republicans had their convention in San Diego, and so I went down. It's just 2 hours away, and I brought my Clinton Gore sign, and there was a designated protest site. And it was in this, it was in the summer, of course, and in the hot summer, and it was in this, basically this asphalt with this huge fence around it. And it was about a mile from the convention site where no one could see you. That was the designated protest area. And I didn't want to go to the designated protest area. To me, that wasn't what free speech was all about. So I went out right in front of the convention hall, was very careful not to block delegates from walking in, but had my Clinton Gore sign and was shouting, four more years and all that kind of stuff. Some of the delegates complained about me, and they sent a police officer out to arrest me. And he came up to me and said, do I want to be arrested? And I said, no, absolutely not. And he said, well, the delegates say you're harassing them. I said, of course I'm harassing them. I'm out here, I'm protesting the convention. I said, but I'm verbally harassing them. I'm not physically harassing them, and this is a public place. I'm out in the street. He said, well, this is a street. You can't be in the street and block traffic. I said, that's true, but there are cones on either side of the street that are already blocking traffic. If you move the cones, I'll leave the street. But while you're blocking traffic, you have created a public space. I have a right to be here. He said, look, do you want to be arrested or not? I said, well, let me tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get your badge number, which I've already got in my mind, 34693, whatever. If you arrest me, I'm going to sue you personally. I'm going to sue the police force of San Diego. I'm going to sue the city of San Diego, because I think I have a First Amendment right to be here, and I'm going to take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court. And, sir, no disrespect to you, but obviously I'm going to have to name you in the suit and serve you as well. Or you can leave me alone here and let me continue to protest. He said, well, I need to talk to my supervisor. And he never came back.
Yeah, but in reality, going back to a generation war before what we are experiencing now, Kent State, we had four kids blown away by National
right.
Guard. So
right.
I'm not really sure where the free zone of speech was at that time, Mark.
Well, but that was illegal.
Pardon me?
But that was illegal.
Yeah.
That,
anyway,
they couldn't do that. Hey, I got to get another caller.
Keep going and, we got to keep debating, keep talking with everybody.
Absolutely.
Here.
Thanks, Corey. Let me go to News Ninja Gene. He wants to join in the debate. Gene, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
How's it going?
It's going good. What are your thoughts?
Oh, geez. Well, I understand your reasoning behind this. I worry about the precedent it sets. And this is why I worry about the precedent it sets. A couple of reasons, or a couple of scenarios. What if you were at a funeral where they, where they'd like you to protest?
If Fred Phelps dies, I'd love to go to his funeral and protest, but I still wouldn't even do that.
Yeah, but the thing of it is, you are among. I'm thinking specifically like the IRA protest and the funerals over in Europe. Granted,
you know, I don't
Europe,
like those either. I don't like when people make funerals into political things. I know that in the Middle East, particularly, a lot of times people will have funerals and then they'll shoot guns up in the air and declare revolution. And I think you can prohibit all of that too. I think a funeral is a private thing. You can decide who enters. You can decide who leaves, and it can be regulated. Now look, you can have huge public funerals. Okay, Princess Diana, right? Was a massive, huge public funeral. I mean, the whole city, the whole world was mourning. Even then, I think you can ban protesters outside that funeral.
Now, in that specific case, I'd have to disagree with you because it's specifically a public funeral. Now, I might agree with you that at a private ceremony you can't protest, but if you've got a public figure. And it's a public ceremony, and there's opposition. I think you could protest in that case.
Well, look, I mean, I think you could pass a law allowing protest. I mean, but I think you could constitutionally prohibit it. And you know what? I just think it's bad form. All right. As much as I detest Dick Cheney, all right. As much as I detest Fred Phelps, when they die, you know, I can handle a law saying don't go directly to the funeral site and protest there. Now, you could protest, you know, a little bit away. I just think it's a very different thing from an inauguration, which is a public political event, or a policy or a signing of a bill or things like that. I just think a funeral is a very different thing.
Well, I still have my reservations in the sense of I'll give you that a funeral is a very different thing, but given this particular situation and current issues around eminent domain, I think it sets kind of a bad precedent.
You know, I got a tougher question for you. This one's really hard.
Okay.
Based on my logic, you want to know where this ball can go too far? Based on my logic that a funeral is a private thing,
okay.
The administration has banned journalists from filming the coffins that come home from Iraq with American flags over them. And here's my view on that. The journalists are obviously not protesting, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they can be disruptive, I mean, with flashes and all, but maybe let's say they're not disruptive. They're doing it from a distance, you know, with cameras that have long lenses. Clearly, I think if the family doesn't mind the journalist there, then I think the government has no business prohibiting the journalist. After all, the privacy that we're protecting is the privacy of the victim of the deceased and the privacy of the deceased's family. If a funeral is a private affair, it is the family of the deceased that is hosting the non-party, okay? It's not a party. But they're the ones, they're the hosts. If for example, people at a funeral want to hear a preacher say, whether it's, you know, the deceased died of AIDS and we need to take this time to raise AIDS awareness and prevent that, and they want to give that eulogy and people support that, that's great. If the person who's died is a Klan leader, and the leader of and someone gives horribly racist eulogy. If that's what the family wants, again, to me, it's like who I invite in my home. You know, I can invite a Jehovah's Witness in my home or not. That's their right. It's their affair. It's their deal. It's a private affair. So I would say, and then maybe people disagree with me on this, that if the family says, don't take pictures of my son's coffin at the funeral, I actually think they can enforce that. Now, if the family says it's okay with us to take pictures, then I don't think the Bush administration can say, well, you can't take pictures even if the family says it's okay. No, I mean, there may be families. Cindy Sheehan, I'm sure, would love to have journalists take pictures of her dead son's coffin. Now, there's a tougher example, I think, outside the funeral context, when the coffins are transported from Iraq to the funeral and are at the airport. I think that may be allowed as a question of news. But those are tougher questions in the middle.
That was what I was going to bring up, because I really don't consider a coffin's coming home, because the coffin isn't interred. You have to be respectful, but I mean, it's not exactly what I would call a funeral.
Well, that's why I say I would restrict. That's why, actually, earlier on the broadcast, Maryland has prohibited protests within 300 feet of funerals or funeral processions. I think I disagree with that part of the law. I think if I were the lawyer for the ACLU, I could get that part struck down, because a funeral procession, I think, is a public place in a way that a funeral at a cemetery is not a public place. So actually, it's a fine line, but I would split the difference between funeral and funeral procession, between coffins being going in the ground and coffins in transit. That's where I would split the baby. Maybe other people might split it differently in other places.
I think, you know, I hadn't thought about that, because you could probably then argue that I don't know why anybody would do this, but you never know. I mean, could you imagine you planned a protest and somebody calls it off because there's a funeral procession that just kind of happens to show up?
Well, that's the thing. A procession is a moving event.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not so hard for police to keep people away from a cemetery. It's you know, keeping people away from a procession, that's you know, I mean, that's a lot harder. And it does raise the question, like with Princess Diana, of a more public event. I mean, if there was a procession, I know, of Ronald Reagan when he died in Washington, that went over Arlington Memorial Bridge. I remember when it happened and the streets were closed and so forth. If people protested that procession, I really don't think I could criticize that. I don't think we could put them in jail for protesting that extremely. Because, again, I guess it all depends on your definition of public and private. And I come down on saying the interment of the grave is private, but the funeral procession is public. Again, that's where I draw the line. Other people might draw it in different places, but that's where I go.
Just one more quick thing. I honestly disagree with you on the code pink. I think they
really
should be allowed to protest because, number one,
loudly?
Should
they be allowed to protest loudly? Once the guy begins the speech, they can shout in the doorway as he goes in. Okay, that's fine with me. After he's done with the speech, they can definitely speak and shout out. But I think during the speech, I don't think they have a right to drown him out. I don't think so.
I don't agree, and here's why I don't agree. Number one, it's a public gallery that they're in, and they have a right to say what they say. Number two, and more importantly, they don't happen to have their own. If their own was created where they could refute what Mr. Rumsfeld said with in exactly the same amount of being covered in media and stuff, then I would say, okay.
Well, Gene, you're kind of raising the fairness doctrine. I mean, I support the fairness doctrine. I support, if you give one point of view, that the media should give equal time and space to give another point of view. But my point is that when you shout down a speaker, I'm not talking about Code Pink holding their own event and having their own speakers, which I fully support. I'm talking about shouting down a speaker. And then at that point, I would argue it's not about free speech, as it's about disrupting his free speech. No one can get a word out if everyone is screaming so loudly that they can't get a word in. I mean, then no one has speech. Instead of having two speeches, which I support, like Lee Bollinger, the president of Colombia, speaking harshly, and then Ahmadinejad speaking, that's fine with me. But if one were to drown out the other, instead of having two speeches, you have no speech. And so I'm sorry. I disagree with you. I think now Code Pink has a right, I think, to speak nonverbally. But during the person's speech, Vice President Cheney or anybody else, You know, or Fred Phelps. Even during Fred Phelps speaking in a public place, I think that drowning them out is a violation of free speech. I do.
I don't know. I can't agree with you simply because I don't feel that that this is the only, I feel the only way that Code Pink or any protest group, this is the only way that they can make their view known. And so,
well, they can do it non-verbally, can't they? Well, can't they bring signs that say stop the war? Can't they, after the speech, hold a press conference? Can't they, as people go into the door, chant stop the war now? I mean, they can do all those things. They can still get their view known. Yeah, they don't have the same prestigious place. I mean, the president always has the best gig. I mean, I think Teddy Roosevelt said it's a bully pulpit. The president, yeah, he's got the biggest megaphone, no question about it. But I think there's a difference, again, between speaking after or nonverbally during or before and drowning out a speech. I wouldn't want, if Martin Luther King was doing the March on Washington and some racist wanted to get up in his face and start yelling and screaming while he was trying to talk, I wouldn't want that. And so I have to give all points of view the right to give their speech.
I'm not sure that I would agree simply because if they were protesting silently, it's the manner of the protest. Then, I mean, if you're silently,
but you could regulate
protesting, that means that, you know, that's a passive thing, and it's,
well, yeah, I understand. Look, I understand why they're doing it. But I just think that in America we have to protect everyone's right to speech, and that means, yes, even in that sense, I'm protecting the right of someone I disagree with. Gene, thanks for your call. I do appreciate it. It's a great issue, and I know that Bob Kincaid has been sitting here chafing at the bit because I think he disagrees with me on some of this. Bob, what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, we're a little tight for time, Mark, but
we'll start now, and maybe I'll sneak into your show.
Okay. fact of the matter is, Mark, you have you're carrying the Reverend Phelps's water in the Reverend Phelps's bucket. You have missed the point. I'm as great a free speecher as there is out there, and in this particular instance, Fred Phelps was not arrested. He was no prior restraint was placed upon him.
Right.
The judgment against him is for intentional infliction of emotional distress, a civil wrong, otherwise known as a tort.
True.
A First Amendment claim cannot defeat a claim of civil harm. So if the judgment stands, it will stand because it is for intentional infliction of emotional distress, not because of the First Amendment nature of the claim. What Fred Phelps has done, however, Mark, is to run out into the public square and scream, "They're violating my First Amendment rights! Oh, Jesus!" And people are being conned by that. It's like the little Looney Tunes in Bill Maher's audience a couple of weeks ago, who, when the people were escorted out for screaming at Bill Maher, said, "So much for free speech."
Right. But that's my point. That's not free speech. That's why I support arresting the Code Pink people when they do that.
And what I'm getting at here is, regardless of the Maryland law did not create the civil harm which Fred Phelps and his minions committed.
No, that's true. That's true.
It's not a free speech issue at all.
Well, for example, the nooses, all right, are, I think, an intentional infliction of emotional distress. And I think you could sue somebody who put a noose on your door because it's like the threat. I mean, assault is not just a criminal matter. It's a civil matter. You know, most crimes, by the way, I know you know this, Bob, most crimes have a civil analog. You know, you can murder someone, that's crime, and then there's wrongful death statutes. It's a civil wrong. That's how they got O.J. Simpson. You know,
they got Al Capone for tax evasion, you know.
Well, I don't know about civil tax evasion, but there's definitely civil battery. If someone hits you, you can sue them for damages, your doctor bills, I mean, all that kind of stuff.
All liability is based on fault.
Right.
Rule one.
So, I'm not
We're
sure.
We're out of time, Mark.
We're out of time.
Time to roll the fun music.
All right, let's do it.
All right.
This is Mark Levine for this hour, signing off. I hope you enjoyed the debate. See you next week.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones dropped more than 360 points in trading today. We'll have the closing numbers from Wall Street coming up in our business segment. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is trying to stop a revolt among U.S. diplomats who do not want to be forced to work in Iraq. At a town hall meeting yesterday, some diplomats opposed being directed to go to Iraq under the threat of dismissal because there may not be enough volunteers. One of the Foreign Service officers called a forced tour in Iraq a, quote, potential death sentence. President Bush is trying to save the nomination of his attorney general choice, Michael Mukasey. President Bush said that Mukasey is being treated unfairly by some senators. There has been concern over his position on the controversial waterboarding technique. The Senate Judiciary Committee will vote on his nomination Tuesday. Democratic Senator Ted Kennedy has said he will oppose Mukasey's nomination because he has not definitively answered the question of the legality of the terror interrogation technique. During a speech today in Washington, President Bush accused the Democrats of, quote, behaving as if America is not at war, end quote. He said this is not the time for Congress to weaken the Justice Department. Reuters reports that the Gulf Arab states are willing to set up a way for Iran to obtain enriched uranium as a way to solve the standoff between Tehran and the West. Iran has denied that it is trying to develop an atomic weapon through the development of its nuclear program. Three U.S. soldiers were killed Wednesday by explosions in northern Iraq. In October, 40 U.S. troops were killed in the Iraq War. That is the lowest monthly death toll for U.S. forces in about 2 years. Across Baghdad and its northern suburbs today, at least 21 people were killed by bomb blasts. 5 bodies were also found in Baghdad. Pakistani opposition leader Benazir Bhutto has left the country to visit Dubai 2 weeks after she survived an assassination attempt right after her return from an 8-year exile. A suicide attack in Pakistan today killed 8 and wounded 40 people aboard a bus.